All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here today. We appreciate your support. Nice Friday, March 15th. Tim, St. Paddy's Day is around the corner, a couple days away. Any big plans, Tim? You're gonna get wasted on green beer?
Someone, there's a bar crawl tomorrow in Charlotte all over town, and someone told me it was the biggest in the country. I said, there's no way that's true. Maybe like the official one or whatever. There's one in New York, obviously. There's one in Boston. I lived on that on St. Patrick's Day. But yeah, I'll be hopping around a little bit tomorrow. How about you? Heading into town?
No. I will not be doing that. Those days are long over. But when I was younger, I used to throw them back. But no, not with seven kids and one on the way. It changes your St. Patrick's Day celebrations. And me being a faithful Catholic, we'll be talking about St. Patrick, the actual saint himself, Timothy. You should know that. Are you Irish?
I am. Yeah. Yeah. I know all about St. Patrick.
Wurzburger, a good Irish name.
my maiden name, my mom's maiden name is Glynn, G-L-Y-N-N.
Maiden name. That was a slip.
Yeah. Oh boy. But yeah, really the only thing about me that's German is my last name. I'm very Irish in my heritage.
Well, in your ideology.
Whatever that
very German.
Yeah. All right. Moving
on. Oh, okay. Okay. Too much. You know, it's funny. My cousin, he sent me a picture of a bar. I guess there's a chain of bars called John Scott's.
Really?
And they're very popular.
I've seen that before too, to me.
They're all over. And he saw this one in Spain. And so he sent me a picture of a bar in Spain. I guess they're in Sweden. I don't know where else they are, but there you go. We should get them as a sponsor of the show. It'd be very easy to integrate them into the show. If only they would come to the United States or Canada. It wouldn't be for the States, because none of our sponsorships are for the States. Only for Canadians.
Well, speaking of Europe, there's an interesting article that came out today that was shared by a listener. I don't know if it's pronounced Michael or Michal or whatever. I'm sorry if I'm getting that wrong. This is the guy that we had on sometime last year, who's in Poland, big time Arizona Coyotes fan. We had him on to defend his team, and great guy, great hockey fan.
Is he a great guy?
Well, I thought so until today. He sent me an article this morning that was just published today, literally this morning in Poland, and the title of it. And I won't tweet it out. You probably don't want me to share this.
I could care less.
Hockey.net, which is the biggest hockey website in Poland. And the title, I have just Google Translate on the page. Through the eyes of Coyote, John Scott, the worst player in NHL history, ? He sent this to me. He didn't say that he wrote it, but I, looking at the page, it's his name on it. And it just talks about the All-Star game. It talks about the Phil Kessel thing and your fighting. And it's a long article. It's probably 2,000 or 3,000 words, multiple sections, multiple pictures.
Holy moly.
And at the end, he writes that, John Scott, if you're reading this, I love you, big guy. And he explained to me that the title, it's hard to read in the translation, but it's written ironically. But I think it's very funny. And apparently that's your reputation in Poland. Would you like to, maybe this weekend we'll put together a response, another article to publish over there.
I have no idea what I did to Poland to elicit this kind of hatred and just like, okay, Poland, Like, relax. You know what I mean? It's just funny people. It's just a preface it. I love you, but, you know, we think you're garbage over here. Your career was just a joke, but we love you. Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. We have the guy on the show have a nice debate about the Arizona Coyotes, and then he's writing articles about how I'm the worst player in NHL history, which could be true. I don't know. Maybe I am. Yeah. All-Star Game MVP right there.
What people don't think that you're self-aware. They're like, John Scott, if he was 5'8" and had the same fighting skills, he never would have made it. It's like, yeah, he knows that.
I know.
You know, it's also like, John Scott doesn't know that the whole NHL All-Star thing was a joke. It's like, no, he knows.
I know.
It's so.
Here's the joke. I know all of that stuff and I'm aware and I embrace it. And I wouldn't have a podcast if not for the All-Star Game. I wouldn't have all this great stuff without the All-Star Game. Very, very well. That, and this is the honest truth. That was one of the main reasons I didn't try to continue my career, because I did have options to go and play. I could have kicked the can, signed a two-way deal, battled my way out like Biz did. Biz played in the AHL for a few years. After he got sent down, he kicked around. I think he went to England and played over there too. I had those opportunities, but I had a really honest conversation with my wife and my agent. And they all said, what a way to go out. And you can use that ending to parlay yourself into a new career. Like, it's the perfect time for you to stop. And I thought about it and I just said, yeah. And it also coincided with my family life. We just had our third and fourth. So it was just a perfect time. I could have easily stuck around for another 3-4 years and just been a traveling sideshow. Easily. Made a bunch of money in the AHL. At that point, they were giving out $100,000, $200,000 contracts. That I had that in my back pocket. But I made the decision not to do that. So I know I wasn't the best. Tim asked me before the show, were you the worst player on your team ever? And I said, every team. Like maybe San Jose with Mike Brown, I had more skills than he did. And Buffalo with Patrick Coletta. I feel like skill-wise, I was better than both of those two players, which says a lot about them. Those guys were terrible. But thanks, Poland. I appreciate it. Never going to Poland. Never. Actually, I want to, but
it's all the Germany jokes that you make. What if you ever think about, like, if the All-Star thing never happened, if you were retired in 2015, said, you know what, I'm ready. What would you have done post retirement? Would you just engineering and that's it?
Do engineering. Yeah. We have, you know, I would have done that, but I parlayed it and switched it around, and now I do this. So this is so much fun. I really appreciate everybody who listens. This is a great, and I'm being honest. I know people don't know when I'm joking or not, but I love doing the podcast. It's so fun. It really is. Talk about hockey, shoot the breeze a little bit. I like that we're now interjecting our personal life into it too. So I meet people around the way. We go downstate. I go around the country sometimes. And they're like, oh, how's the kids? How's the chickens? How's this? How's that? It's really neat. And it's not like other podcasts where they just want to talk about effing and jeffing. It's like they know our life a little bit. They don't know your life. Tim never shares anything. You're like a closed book. The people are clamoring for it. Like, I wish we knew more about Tim. He doesn't share. He never talks.
I can share anything, but you always ask direct questions about my dating life, specifically when I say before we start recording, hey, let's not talk about this. And you'll say, okay, sounds good. And that's the first thing that you ask. So those times where it's really awkward in the beginning, just know, listeners, that that's the reason, is because like a specific thing, which John does know about. He tries to throw me off, but I'm more than happy to talk about myself. I just don't think people are that interested, except for the dating stuff, which I don't like talking about on the show.
That's what everybody wants to know.
Yeah.
That's what they want to hear about. Are you, how's that going?
See, this is what I mean. Yeah. Yeah. I am dating somebody. I'll say that. Yeah.
We did the live show on Bleacher Report, and the whole Bleacher Report staff was like, let's get into it. Let's talk about trades. First thing I asked Tim was how his dating life was going. The producer is just like, what the hell is going on? And Tim's just like beat red because he doesn't want to talk about it. And
I do turn red. Funny. I've noticed that. Yeah.
It's a little thing I like to do more for me because no one else understands the inside joke, but except I do. And I enjoy it. But anyways, moving on. Thank you, Poland. I appreciate it. Speaking of gambling, Tim, this episode is brought to you by Bet99. Bet99 was voted the number one gambling experience in Canada. with same game parlays, player props, and flash bet markets. Elevate your experience at Bet99. My pick this week, Tim, is Kirill the Thrill. He's got 8 goals in his last 6 games. Did you know that?
I did. Yeah.
He's shooting the puck a ton, like just firing everything on net. He had a big game against St. Louis on Saturday. Look for him to get on the scoreboard once again. So my pick, Kirill the Thrill Kaprizov. Go all in on him. You need to be 19 plus, and you better play responsibly. Available to persons only in Ontario. Sorry, 9 other provinces, 3 territories, and 50 states. Only Ontario. We love you guys. Bet99 is built by Canadians for Canadians. All right, Tim, moving on.
That was pretty good, John. Just so close. One correction. He has a big game tomorrow against the Blues, not last Saturday. That's actually correct. A big one, too, because they're both fighting for the standings, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But they're right in the hunt there in the West.
They're in the hunt. All right, moving on. You know, there's the code. There's, you know, the unwritten rules of hockey. And then there's hockey etiquette. And that's what we're going to talk about here in the first segment, because it's a strange idea. It's not written down. There's no, you know, scripture like this is how you play. There's no 10 commandments of these are the rules of hockey. You have to abide by them. No, this is just unknown stuff that people either know or they don't know. And now some people agree on most of them. There's a fraction that doesn't. And we're going to talk about a couple situations that just happened yesterday, Tim, that are just perfect into this avenue. The first one, Claude Giroux in a shootout. Ottawa Senators versus the Columbus Blue Jackets. He comes down. He was the third shooter, the final shooter. He was going against Elvis Merzlikins. What a great last name. Man, if I was playing against him, the chirps. So he comes down against Merzlikins, and he just winds up a slap shot in the hash marks. Boom, top shelf. He doesn't even celebrate. Merzlikins is looking behind him and doesn't quite know what's going on. It seems like he was confused. Did it go in? Where did it go? He just sits there for a long time on his knee, looking behind him, just trying to survey the area. People are upset. Columbus fans, not happy. What is your take, Tim, on this?
Yeah, I go back and forth on this because I think it's not just that he took the slap shot, which is obviously not the first one to do. Many guys have done it, including like Char, who has arguably the hardest shot in the history of the league. And so it's not like he's the one who invented this move or whatever, but something about the casualness of it, how he skates in kind of slowly and casually and just winds up right at the hash marks, lets it rip, and then just doesn't even celebrate. Something feels very disrespectful about it. So I don't know. Like, if I'm a Blue Jackets fan, if I'm one of their players, certainly if I'm Merzlikins, I don't like it. But I don't feel like it's a breach of etiquette or something that's legitimately worth complaining about or being upset about. It's a perfectly legal play, and I don't think there's anything really wrong with it.
I'm glad you said that. I agree. I played with Thomas Vanek, the innovator of the move. Thomas Vanek did this 20 years ago. He had terrible hands. Not terrible hands, but on a breakaway, a shootout situation, he did not like deking. He did not like doing any of those sorts of things. So when he would go in, it was slapshot regatta. Like, he would just go in and rip a slapshot, and he was so deadly accurate with it, top shelf. And it's really, really tough on the goalies. If you don't give him any indication, if you're going left, right, and he would score the majority of the time. So I don't know. It is what it is. You're allowed to do it. It's just like cap circumvention. It's okay. It's a part of the game. Just because he scored doesn't mean you have to get angry about it. I'm sure you have 20 guys on your team who take slap shots. Get them to do it. Have them go down and rip a slap shot. Here's one thing that I've always wanted the team to do. Have your first guy go and just rip run right off the goalie's head. And then the next two guys are going to be dazed and they're going to score. It's like the longest yard when Adam Sandler hits the referee in the privates.
Yeah.
Two in a row. And then it's like a good game after that. So that's what, I don't know. Maybe that's not etiquette in football. I don't know how that works, but I think Columbus fans are just being a little too sensitive. Elvis Merzlikin, his wounds.
Nice.
Anybody? No. All right. What's this next one, Tim, that people are upset about?
This one, I feel like, has more of a leg to stand on. The Leafs and the Flyers played last night, and with less than 3 minutes left, the Leafs went on the power play, and they're winning the game 6-1 at this point. And Sheldon Keefe put out the power play one, you know, the top power play unit out against the Flyers. Late in the game, blowout game, Flyers are not happy. You can see the head coach, who's, you know, the assistant coach, is interim head because Tortorella's out. And the bench and the players just yapping down across the way at the Leafs. They're not happy. They think it's disrespectful, a breach of etiquette, et cetera. I don't know. I think they're probably right about this. This feels like, unless you have specific, like your power play has not been playing well and you're trying to get them as many reps as possible, right? Like that sort of makes sense. Or if there's a specific player that you're trying to get a confidence booster. Like, you know, 2 weeks ago, this with the Bruins, and they really wanted Jake DeBrusk to get on the board, because he's been struggling lately. Maybe there's a scenario where that makes sense. But beyond that, it does feel disrespectful. What do you think?
I'm of the ilk that maybe you shouldn't have just taken a penalty. I don't know. I'm on the side of Toronto on this one. And it's funny when, I don't know, that even the Philly coach looks like a little weenie. What's his name?
He looks like a tiny little man.
It's really funny. He's like, eh. I don't know. But yeah, they were 0-3 on the power play to that point. So I just think they were working on their power play. They wanted to get that going. Obviously, Mitch Marner is hurt. They're trying to figure out how to work that power play without him in the mix. And it wasn't being successful versus Philadelphia. So they wanted to get some more reps. They did not score. They finished 0-4 on the night. But I don't know. I'm like I said, if you don't want someone to do something to embarrass you, don't take a penalty or do something about it. I hated just whining and complaining. It's like, okay, if you're upset that their first power play unit is out there, put out Nick Delorier and break someone's ankle. Right? Instead of just whining and complaining and screaming at Sheldon Keefe, does nothing. It just makes you look like a baby. If you see them put out the first unit, whisper in Garnet Hathaway's ear or Nick Delorier and say, hey, go and chop Austin Matthews. Done. You think they're going to put out the first unit the next time you play? They play him next week, right? That solves more of anything. It gets you to release your anger rather than you're just sitting there yelling. Sitting and yelling doesn't do much, as far as I know. It just makes you look like a baby.
But
that's what I would do if I was a coach, Tim.
Don't you think giving them an earful is different from like, okay, go out and hurt somebody? Aren't you the ones that breach the etiquette at that point?
Yeah, it's completely different. One's effective and one's useless.
But I'm saying like it's crossing a line where all of a sudden in that scenario, the Flyers would be the etiquette breakers for going out and hurting somebody.
It's arbitrary. It's who's the arbiter here of what's right and what's wrong. What's the etiquette? That's what I mean. The etiquette police, everybody has their own view on it. So if I'm upset that they're embarrassing me, I have to respond. So I will put out one of my tough guys and break one of your stars' ankles. Like, yes, it escalates quickly. But instead of just sitting there screaming, like just putting on the show, like, I don't like this. I don't like you embarrassing me and trying to score. It's like, okay. Instead of doing that, make a pay. That's how I would coach. I wouldn't make a big show of it. I would maybe do it on the tail end of the penalty kill. I wouldn't put him out there right away, but I would make it happen. I would try to do something to injure one of their players. And maybe that's frowned upon these days. I don't know. But that's what I would do. Let's see what happens. They play again on Tuesday, Tim. Do you think Torts, who will be back, do you think he just goes scorched earth is in his first game back and just, I'm going to settle this score? Or do you think he's telling his assistant coach to just shut your mouth? We need to get points. Like, what are you doing?
I think it's somewhere in the middle. And I think it's going to be like, he's not going to initiate it, but he's going to have a hair trigger. Like if Toronto does something like this, or he feels like there's a line that's been crossed somehow, compounded that with what happened last night, I feel like he will be quick to respond, but he's not going to be the one who initiates it. Especially since, like you said, the Flyers need every point they can get right now.
Yeah, I think John Tortorella thinks a lot like I do.
I think so, too.
So if they do get up a couple goals, it wouldn't surprise me if he wants to settle a score. Because I wouldn't like that either. You're up by five. There's however many minutes left. They're throwing out the best power play unit. I would be a little ticked off too. Let's see. That penalty happened at 17:11 of the third period. So there was 2 minutes and 49 seconds left and they roll out their top unit. I'd be a little upset too. I would do something about it. You know, I legit would put out Delorier.
So,
and I would say break his hand. Go for it. We'll kill a 5-on-3 off.
Jerry says on this one that the Leafs did breach etiquette. Yes, break etiquette.
Yeah, I believe so. You know, but they were working on their power play. But there's a time and a place for everything. Does it have to be with 2 minutes left? At that point, do you risk injuring one of your top guys, right? And the Philadelphia Flyers responding. And it's a tricky tightrope to walk because you're trying to get your guys some work. I don't know. It's like, do you sit them for the last couple games before the playoffs? If they do, they get hurt. If not, they're rusty. Do you put your first power play unit out there at the end of the game when they don't need to score? It's a tricky thing. The purists would say, yeah, play him to the end. Let's go. I would try to break his ankles. Clip that. That'll be a good one for Poland. They'll like that. Yeah. Yeah. Goon wants to hurt people. All right. Speaking of the standings upstates, the Philadelphia Flyers, all these teams in the East and the West, they're jockeying for positions. I wanted to do a minor update just to get everybody an umbrella view of what's going on, Tim. Let's start in the East. What's happening in the wild card in the East, Tim?
Yeah, the team everyone's talking about today is the Buffalo Sabres, who are making things pretty interesting. They won again last night. They've won three in a row, and they're now only three spots out of a playoff spot. 3 points, I mean. They still have Detroit in their way. Washington's still right there. Obviously, the Lightning are still there. But there's an argument that to be made that these guys could really push onto it. And a lot of
Tim, I don't want to cut you off. The wins are versus teams are chasing. It was Detroit and the Islanders back to back, and both wins are in regulation. So those are 4 point games. And then their first win before this three game stretch, they beat the Edmonton Oilers. So this is a huge, you know, little streak they're on because they're 1 point behind Detroit now, and they're 1 point behind the Islanders. Sorry, 3 points behind the Islanders. So huge, huge wins for the Sabres. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, well, I was going to say, we talked about Bowen Byram the other day, how good he's been since joining the team. He's got 3 points during this stretch. Tage Thompson also has 3 points. And the guy who's leading the charge right now offensively is Zach Benson, of all players. He has 3 goals, 2 assists in the past week. Like, he's playing very, very well. And so I feel like, I don't know, we predicted the Sabres, obviously, before the season to make a big step forward, and they didn't do it. I would love for them to be the second wildcard team. Ahead of the Islanders, ahead of Detroit. I think it would be so much fun to watch this team in the playoffs. They're going to lose in the first round if they do. But I just feel like it'd be so good for this group to get some postseason experience to build on for Dahlin and Tage and some of the other guys who haven't really sniffed it yet. So I think it'll be great. I hope they keep winning.
Yeah, because you get into that mode of just we're a losing team if you don't sniff some success every once in a while. And this team hasn't been in the playoffs, I want to say 14 years. It's been a long time. So they need to get there, because if they don't, these young players will just be okay with losing. It'll just be ingrained in them, like, okay, we're a bad team. We will continue to perpetually be a bad team. We won't be able to compete. And that does stick with you. And it takes a long time to shake it off. Look at the Edmonton Oilers. They were in that mode for over a decade. Only recently have they started to be a successful team. But the Sabres, man, like, Dahlin's been there, I want to say, for 5-6 years. This is Owen Power's third year. So these guys are growing up in a culture of just losing, of just abject failure. And that stays with you for a long, long time. So they need to start sniffing some success, or else they're going to have to just retool and get new players in there. So I believe in Tage. I still do. I know he's having a down year. He's the new captain of the team. They just haven't announced it yet. But he is the guy. He will lead them to the promised land. I think more importantly, this will build for next year. Yes, we said it last year. This team was supposed to take the next step. They had a great finish to last year, vying for the playoff spot. I hope this isn't just a duplicate of last year. Oh, it was fun playing meaningful games at the end of the year. Then we just flamed out. And now we stunk this year. I hope they don't do the same thing this coming year. But they're making it exciting. People are giving them a window to get into the playoffs, a little crack, and they're taking advantage of it, beating the Red Wings, beating the Islanders, Washington Capitals, faltering a little bit. Let's go Buffalo. That would be fun to see them in the playoffs. And I think they would give Florida a run for their money. I really do. They're a good team, this Buffalo Sabres. And that they didn't sell at the deadline. Okposo, he was expendable. You get rid of Mittelstead, but you get Bowen Byram. So, like, that's even pick. I would argue that a good fast-footed, fleet-footed, puck-moving defenseman is more valuable than a second-line center. Not for Colorado when you have Cale Makar, but on a whole, every team in the NHL probably would prefer to have a puck-moving defenseman who can jump up in the rush and is very offensive. So, I don't know. Go Buffalo. Let's go Buffalo. Very fun.
Well, you mentioned Detroit, and this is kind of the opposite of Buffalo, where everything was finally starting to click, and you feel like you guys have arrived, and the Eiser plan's working, and then, like we said the other day, they had lost six in a row, and now they've lost their seventh. They lost to Arizona 4-1 last night to a bottom three, a bottom five team in the league. That's the second time during this seven-game stretch that they've lost to Arizona. They've lost to some other bad teams, too. And then the video surfaced on Wednesday of their teammates fighting each other at practice. Now, I know this isn't a unique thing. This happens a couple of times a year on a couple of teams. It's not like it's a major event, but it does kind of represent just the frustrations that are building in this locker room. And those two teammates were Lucas Raymond and Ben Chiarot. And Ben's obviously a lot bigger than the guy, but they were tussling. And so there's obviously some frustrations there. And seven in a row is pretty bad. The one thing they have in their favor that I mentioned last episode is they do have a relatively easy schedule the rest of the month. I said that on Wednesday, and then they lost to Arizona. That was one game they obviously needed to win. They still have Buffalo coming up. That's going to be a huge game for the standings for both teams. Must win for both teams. And followed up by Pittsburgh, Columbus, Islanders, Nashville, Washington are their next six games. Like these, you got to hope for at least 500, right? In that stretch. And then Carolina and Florida to wrap up the month.
Well, the only problem, they just lost to Buffalo on Tuesday, 7-3. So if recent history suggests anything, they're in a lot of trouble. And yeah, the fighting thing is normal. It happens all the time. People get, you know, they're upset. It's that time of year. You're trying to win games and you're not winning. Frustrations are high and the guys are feeling it. And Detroit hasn't been in this situation in a long time. Lucas Raymond, this is the first time he's really been in the hunt for the playoffs in this time of the year. They're usually sellers. They're thinking about next year. They're planning their vacation after the season. So they're in uncharted territory, and they're obviously the pressure is getting to them. So it's a good thing. It's not a good thing that they're losing 4-1 and 4-0 to the Arizona Coyotes. That's a bad thing. Like, you need to figure yourself out if you're going to make the playoffs. In my eyes, Detroit's done. I'm so happy. And I don't take, you know, pleasure in seeing a team lose, but it's like the Polish guy, but you're terrible, this and that. I'm kidding. I do take pleasure in this. I like that they're failing because I've been a big critic of Steve Yzerman and the Yzer plan. And I said it last show, you lose one player and your team falls apart. It's so gratifying for me to see them lose. It's really, they're fighting in practice. I wish I was at this practice. It'd be so great. But yeah, they will not make the playoffs. That's my prediction. They're out. This is it. The free fall will continue.
Islanders and Sabres are ahead of them in your mind? In terms of
the wild card, I think Tampa's got the last wild card wrapped up. If they stay there, that'll eventually be the Boston Bruins. But yeah, the second wild card spot, I think, will be the Sabres or the Islanders. Maybe even the Capitals. Wouldn't it be fun if the Capitals snuck in?
I can't believe they're still
Ovechkin well. Scores a million goals. Do playoff goals count for total goals? I don't think they do.
I don't think they do. No. Do you did you ever have an incident at practice, like a serious one, getting into it with a guy?
No. Like I would slash and stuff and hack, and no one would fight me in practice. You crazy? No. Like, because I would always be the scout PK and Tim. I'm not just saying this. I was a very good penalty killer in practice. Like, lights out. And you know me, I would be chirping. I would be yelling. I would be in their ear being like, you guys suck at power play. Like I would be all over them. And so guys would get upset at me. They'd be slashing my stick and yelling at the coaches. And I love it. once I know someone is sensitive about a certain issue, I pick at it, I poke it, I'm just all over it. And I just, I love it. And so, yeah, I would be ticking people off left and right, but no, no one ever came at me. They would slash me and this and that. And no, no one's going to fight me in practice. Crazy.
Yeah.
How did Patrick Kane die? Practice. All right. Speaking of teams who are in the midst and kind of making a game for this last wild card spot, our friends, the New Jersey Devils, sellers at the deadline, getting rid of Tyler Toffoli, all these fun things. Did they trade anybody else other than Toffoli? I guess their goaltender, they replaced everybody.
Yeah.
They bring in Jake Allen, fire their coach, Lindy Ruff, newly re-signed to a new long-term deal. Well, I guess not long-term, a couple of years, but they fire him. All of a sudden, the Devils are making some noise, Tim. Allen makes a big 35-save win in his debut. Defeat the Dallas Stars, who are a pretty good team last time I checked. The biggest change, Tim. What's going on with Timo Meier?
Well, that's the thing. And talking about the Devils, like if we're talking about how good the Sabres are and they're making things interesting, you have to give the Devils credit too, because they're only 1 point behind the Sabres. And a lot of it has to do with, despite being sellers, like you said, the new goalie, like they just weren't getting enough from Vanecek and Schmid. So they trade Vanecek for Kapokkanen, and then they bring in Jake Allen too, who had a great start, like you said. And then a big part of it has been the offense, Timo Meier. So the day that Lindy Ruff was fired, and the next episode that we recorded, we said, look out for how this impacts Timo Meier. We said this 2 weeks ago, because when you have a struggling player, that's kind of like the name you circle on the lineup card to figure out what this does for him. And a new coach, a new system, and the owner even said they wanted to change things up pretty dramatically with their offense and their system and all that. Timo Meier now has 8 goals, 2 assists in 7 games so far in March, tied for the league lead. He's been one of the most, you know, highest offensive producers since this Devils fired Lindy Ruff. And he's a huge part of why they're still hanging in there, despite the fact they've had major injuries, despite the fact that they traded away one of their top 6 forwards in Tyler Toffoli. This is what they've been waiting for since they traded for him 2 years ago. This is the Timo Meier that they wanted, and finally they're getting it.
Yeah, and they've only scored 20 goals in March. So 8 in 20, that's almost half the goals he's accounted for. This is huge for the New Jersey Devils. Sorry, my headphones fell out. I need to get one of those wireless ones, Tim. That you would help. So I wouldn't have to... they fell out again. My big bum keeps sitting on the cord. Funny. But yeah, it's good for the Devils. I think it's too little too late. It would be great if he would have done this at the beginning of the year. It just shows you coaching means so much. It's got to be frustrating for the GM, for the fan base, and for these players to know that this was the potential for this team and why it was not unlocked earlier. Why didn't Lindy Ruff like push these buttons and just put Timo Meier? Who is he with now? He's with Jesper Bratt and Erik Haula. Why didn't that work before? I don't know. Maybe he's putting him in better positions. Maybe the scenarios, the ice starting issues, maybe just the game plan is just completely different. But it is frustrating to see everything clicking now for Timo Meier now that you just have a new coach pushing all the buttons. So I don't know. They might get in. They do have a game in hand on Buffalo, so they're still in the mix, but goodness gracious. They don't have an easy road ahead. They play some pretty good teams coming up. You get Winnipeg, you get Vegas, Pittsburgh, who is a hard out. Then you get the Leafs, so the Sabres, who are revitalized. But it's going to be exciting down the stretch for these guys. The fact that they're even still in the mix is amazing. Funny story, Jake Allen, he nixed a trade to the Devils earlier this season because he had a full no-move clause, and he just said, nope. No, 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 thank you. And now all of a sudden, I don't know why he lifted it or what the deal is there, but he now is a New Jersey Devil. But he nixed the trade earlier this season when they were looking for a goaltender. So comes full circle, Tim.
It does, yeah. And I'm just happy, like you said, that they're in the mix. And here we are in March, middle of March, and we have 5, maybe 6 teams in this wild card race, which just makes it a lot of fun. Every game is going to be so meaningful. And these teams are going to play each other a lot over the next 6 or 8 weeks. So it'd be a lot of fun to see those 2 to 4 point swings, like you said.
Now, the Penguins are still in it too. They aren't out of it. I know they sold at the deadline and this and that, and there's turmoil and everything that goes along with it, but they're 1 point behind the Devils with the game in hand. So they could go on a streak. You never know. Don't count out Evgeny Malkin. You didn't think I was going to say him, did you?
They're done. They're toast. They're one of the worst teams in the league. They're so bad.
They're not on your list for the next segment. Oh, money where your mouth is, Tim.
Yeah, let's do that. The top three and bottom three brought to you by Tim Hortons. With the new Roll Up to Win promotion, you can download the Tim's app to win prizes, including a daily cash jackpot of $10,000, an all-electric Volkswagen ID4, and a sun-soaked Hilton getaway. Download the Tim's app. Contest goes until March 31st. We have done this. It's been a few months probably since we've done it, a few weeks anyway, and we kind of like checking in throughout the season and talking about the three best teams in the league and the three worst. My take, my Tim's take today, I'll start with the three best. Number one is Florida. And this one I struggle with. I still don't think, I don't buy in as much as a lot of other people do, but you have to look at the standings and the talent and the and just the production and just give them the credit that they probably do. So Florida, I think, is probably number one. I'll say number two is Colorado. I know they're only fourth or fifth in the standings if you look at, if you filter by the entire league and both conferences. But to me, they're just, no matter where they are in the standings, they're so good. They're so dangerous. And they have not had all their players in the lineup the whole year. So that accounts for a few points that they probably would have gotten otherwise. I still think they're the best team in the West. And they're playing really well right now. And the third team, and I went back and forth. I thought about the Rangers. I thought about Vancouver. I thought about Boston. But I'm going to give it to Carolina. Again, a little bit further down the standings, but they've been playing really well. They got arguably, you know, the best forward at the deadline in Jake Guentzel. They added Kuznetsov, who's kind of a feast or famine type player. But
scored
last night. Yeah, he's been playing great. He did his chicken wing celebration last night. And Carolina also looks really, really good. And they're so hard to play against in the playoffs. So I'm going to give those three teams as my top three.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty close. I take out Carolina. I don't think they're there quite yet, but they're close. Very, very close. They're a good team. I have Vancouver in there. I think it's potatoes, potatoes at this point. The top teams are the top teams. I think Florida's obviously, I think, set themselves apart from the group. In my eyes, they're the best. And then there's a real big group that are just behind them. And you could put Edmonton in there. You could put the Rangers in there. There's a lot of teams that could fit into that second tier. But Florida won. Colorado looks really good. And then, yeah, Vancouver. Honorable mention, Tim, to a wildcard team. Nashville Predators have not lost a game in the last 10 games. They've been playing really, really good hockey, and they've been beating some really good teams. So there's a good time to get hot, and it's at the end of the season. They're winning against some good teams. Like, they've beaten Colorado. They've beaten the Vegas Golden Knights. They're on a tear. Winnipeg Jets a couple times. So don't sleep on those Nashville Predators. All of a sudden, they are clicking. They have a good veteran leadership, Roman Josi, Ryan O'Reilly. So they could be fun in the playoffs, Tim. And when you got a goalie, Juuse Saros, who can steal you a couple games, I don't know. Maybe they're not much of a push, as much of a pushover as we thought they would be as a wild card team. So the wild card in the West is Vegas and Nashville. That's a little bit more tricky if I'm like a top team. Whereas in the East, it's like, oh, I get the Islanders, I get the Red Wings or the Sabres potentially. That second wild card spot, you want to be in first place in the East. So yeah, those are my top three. Who are your bottom three, Tim?
Yeah, I'm going to go with San Jose Sharks, obviously. Chicago, obviously. I don't really need to explain those two.
You mean obviously?
Obviously. My next one, the third one, I went back and forth. I thought about Montreal. I thought about Anaheim, but I'm going with Columbus. They just have not been able to put it together. And it's just, I feel like they're a team that should be better than they are, but they're not. So they wrap up my bottom three.
Yeah, I think San Jose is the obvious worst team in the NHL. They have just struggled. They haven't done anything, and they're on just a massive losing streak, 1-7-2 in their last 10. They're in free fall. They're a terrible team. I don't put Chicago in there. Lately, they've been really good. They're on a two-game winning streak. They're playing fantastic hockey. Connor Bedard has found himself ever since he put the bubble back on after breaking his jaw. The kid's been on fire. I have the Anaheim Ducks and the Arizona Coyotes as my last two. Chicago beat Arizona twice. The last two times they played him, the last week and a half, 7-4 and 5-2. They just waxed the Anaheim Ducks the other day, 7-3, I want to say. So they are lighting it up. They're beating these bad teams really bad. So yeah, I'm going San Jose, Anaheim, and Arizona. Those are my bottom three. What is going on in Vancouver you're all excited about?
Yeah, there's a lot of chatter here. Vancouver's in an interesting situation because they have a lot of expiring contracts coming up this summer. They have Quinn Hughes locked up long-term, but they have Tyler Myers coming off the books, Philip Ronick, Nikita Zadorov, and Ian Cole, all with expiring contracts. All those guys are, you know, top four defensemen at this point. You know, you can balance it out. But The number one they want to resign is Filip Hronek. They like Tyler Myers. They want to extend him, although not at his $6 million that he makes now. It's going to have to be significantly less. I think Ian Cole probably walks. I think Zadorov's going to be looking for a payday that he'll probably get on the open market. But they like to lock up Hronek long term. Here's where it gets interesting. The money, right? So he's having a good year for him, and he's been a huge part of their success so far this year. But the reports are that the Canucks have zero interest in paying him anywhere near what Hughes gets. And Hughes is already significantly underpaid, I should say. He's making 7.85, which is just an absolute steal, and does that for three more years after this season. Reportedly, the Canucks want to keep Hronek under $7 million. They would maybe go to 7.1, 7.2, but they don't want to get any higher than that. They want to keep him below Hughes. So the reported offer was for $52 or $54 million range for 8 years, which averages out to 6.5 to 6.75 per year. And I would think that would be a totally fair deal, you know, considering what Hronek has 45 points so far this year in 67 games, which is great. That's very valuable, but it's not like a silly number. He's not approaching a point per game or anywhere near it. And he's an offensive first guy. Like, he plays a pretty good complete game, but he's not like an everything type defenseman. And reportedly that $52 million offer over 8 years was not well received by the Hronek camp, which means they want significantly more. Wasn't even enough to really start a negotiation. So I'll pause there for a second, John. Do these numbers surprise you? Are you surprised as I am that he wouldn't take a deal close to that?
Surprised? No. I think a good comparable to him would be Devin Taves in Colorado. Makar is the stud. Devin Taves, I don't want to say cleans up when he makes a mistake, but he makes Makar better. He gives him the puck when he needs it. He fills in for him. He just is a good Batman to his, or a good Robin to his Batman. And I think that's what Filip Hronek is. Devin Taves just signed an 8-year, $7.25 million contract. His extension kicks in next year. So if I'm a Filip Hronek agent or in his camp, that's my comparable. So I want that type of money. And it's, yeah, I would turn down, what do they offer? 6 point something?
6.5 to 6.75, somewhere in that range for 8 years.
Yeah, I would turn it down. I say he's 7 or higher. I think that's a solid number for him to be at. And he's having a career year, like you said. So his value is crazy high. The Capitals gave up a first and second rounder to get him. Or the Canucks, excuse me, gave up a lot to get him. So his camp knows that they have invested a lot already in him. So this is just all negotiation. It's just, you know, leverage. And Filip Hronek has it right now. He's going to be a UFA after this season. He has a lot of options out there. He's a very coveted defenseman. So you take your first offer? No way. You try to sweeten the deal a little bit. You want to get more, and you take the second, third offer. That's just kind of negotiation 101. So I think they'll eventually end at around Devin Taves' area, 7.25, and get it above the $50 million total all in, because that's what Vancouver wants. They want to have that 1-2 locked in long term. That's ideally what they want. And they already have Quinn Hughes locked up. Get Hronek locked up. And then you can just set and forget those guys. They play 25 minutes a night. You're looking pretty good. The cap's going up. This won't be a big number. It'll be a steal in 3 years because Ronick's only 26. Quinn Hughes is what, 22, 23? So these guys are haven't even reached the prime of their career yet. So the runway is still very, very long. Quinn Hughes is 24, excuse me. So you can have these guys for 10 years. 7 years, and they're still going to be really, really good, valuable players. They don't start to, you know, die down until they're 30, 32 years old. So the meat of their career, Tim. So yeah, I know it's a long-winded answer, but I do think he's worth 7 or more.
Yeah, well, either way, he's going to get a huge payday, especially compared to what he's made before. He's coming on the third year of a $4.4 million per contract. His estimated earnings are just under $10 million so far in his career. So he's in for a huge payday. He's going to, you know, triple that over the next contract at least, make a whole bunch of money, and you know, hopefully he can keep it up. I always worry about...
I want to correct myself. He's a restricted free agent this year. I don't know how. He's 26 years old, and he's a restricted free agent. I don't know how that happens. So the Vancouver Canucks do hold his rights. So... there you go. I was wrong in that. I figured after 25, I thought you'd become a UFA right away, but apparently not. There must be something when he came over from Europe, maybe, or when he started playing in the NHL. I don't know. But yeah, he is an RFA. So Vancouver will control his rights. They can go to arbitration, get that 1 year deal, worst case scenario. But anyways, before everybody rips me, he's an RFA, you loser. All right.
Well, I always worry about guys having the best season of their career in a contract year. You know, especially, you know, he's getting, I think, boosted numbers by playing on arguably the best team in the league and playing a lot of time with Quinn Hughes, who just puts up, you know, 2 points a game practically. So I don't know. I would be hesitant to commit long term and that much money to a guy that I think is probably going to be overpaid.
But in that same note, you could say he has brought the best out of Quinn Hughes, and Quinn Hughes is playing his best hockey because he plays alongside Ronick.
Yeah, you're right.
So it goes kind of both ways. He's a good player. They wouldn't have given a first and second rounder if they didn't want to keep him around. So they'll get this done. They have so much money with Tyler Myler's off the book and Ian Cole and those guys. So they'll figure out a way to get him signed because he's really good. I like him.
Okay, we'll wrap up with our quick hits, which are brought to you by DoorDash. Our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more. Download the DoorDash app and our promo code NATION25, all capitals, valid in Canada, subject to change, terms may apply. Just two quick ones here. The first one is, we kind of knew this was coming, but Jonas Siegenthaler is officially out with a concussion from the Matt Rempe hit. Yep. No surprises there, but just to kind of put a bow in that situation, he is missing time because of a concussion. So hopefully he comes back soon and, you know, we'll see what happens next time these two teams play each other.
Get your head up.
Second one, we got to give some credit to Ilya Samsonov since he came back up after his stint down with the Marlies and getting his head, you know, his head right. He's 13-3, which is just huge. 2.35 goals against, 912 save percentage, added a shutout during that stretch. We talked about it at the time. Sometimes it is just a mental thing, especially when it comes to goalies. He feels like he's playing his best hockey right now, and he's just doing exactly what they needed to add that stability in the net that they've been craving. The Leafs are playing very well right now. They won, you know, 3 games in a row, I think. He's a huge part of it. So hopefully he keeps it up heading into the playoffs.
There you go. A little update on the etiquette of hockey. Sheldon Keefe called John Tortorella and said he was sorry.
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
That's funny.
He said he reached out and apologized, or he apologized to Philadelphia or something. I don't know. Soft. it's just, that stuff is funny. Whatever.
Yeah. That is funny.
Way to go, anything Keefe. Else? Way to stick to your guns. Just a joke. Does he get fired regardless of what Toronto does this year if they don't win a Stanley Cup?
No. I feel like he's had ample time to be fired and he's never fired. So I don't know. It depends who they are. They're not going to win again. They're not going to get out of the first round most likely.
Well, that's the thing. If they win one round, is he safe again and lose in the second? Yeah. I think it's Stanley Cup or bust for him.
I just don't see... What else could he do that he's not doing? You know, like, it's the players.
Well, you saw what happened in New Jersey with Timo Meier. Just takes one coach.
I guess.
I don't know. I just posed a question and you completely broke down. You can't handle that, Tim. I don't know.
Don't ask me questions, John. You know better than that.
I think they fire him unless he makes the Stanley Cup an appearance. They don't have to win it, but he has to get there. Just my opinion.
Interesting.
All right. Okay. Anything else, Tim?
No. Have a good weekend with your green beers in downtown Traverse City.
Are you bringing your girlfriend with you downtown?
I'm going out with a bunch of people.
Oh, yeah. Okay. She's calling everybody. If you're in Charlotte, keep an eye out for Tim and his girlfriend. They're going to be making out all over the pub crawl. I will be with my kids. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good weekend. Stay safe out there, but have some fun. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.